Yes, ma'am. Okay, but I missed the name that you said.
It's Eric Horner's mom.
Eric Horner.
I think yeah. Her first name is Mary.
All right, that's
Eric Horner's mother.
Then let's pray for Eric Horner and his mother. If somebody would lead out, I'd appreciate it. So, we're in the book of Deuteronomy, which is hard to remember since it's been a while, and we kind of got sidetracked to go a little more detail into the Ten Commandments. So, as a quick test, the first commandment is what?
No,
shall have no other gods before me. Second commandment? What? Are you asking or telling? You shall not make yourself a carved image. And notice, I mean, how long this one is. I mean, this is the importance of them. They're all important, but he really wants to spell this one out. The third one? You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. And then observe the Sabbath. And then
honor your parents.
And then what? It's what? You shall not murder, and then last line we did, you shall not commit adultery, and this week, you shall not steal. So, just thinking of theft, what are some of the ways you have experienced theft in our culture?
Tax evasion.
Tax evasion.
Taxes
over, yeah, I'm thinking there's a thin line between who's doing the stealing. Right. What else?
Plagiarism.
How so? Yeah, it's a bigger and bigger issue. In fact, our church in Pennsylvania, he had a plaque on the wall with the requirements of the denomination against plagiarism. It's like, you know, this is a big deal because now, I mean, students learn this in college. You can go on turnpapers.com and tell them how many pages you want and what you're getting and pass it off as your work, and the you know, the pastor can do the same thing. Just get a, you know, a great sermon and preach it like it's your own. And what are you stealing when you do that? How is that theft? You shall not steal. Yeah.
Unless I donated.
Yeah. But as a student, I mean, if I download a term paper and pass it off and get a grade, I mean, I'm stealing a grade from the students that actually did the work. That diminishes the value of their grade when I get a grade for stuff I didn't do. But it also is just dishonest.
It's an issue.
It is an integrity issue.
Several years ago, I don't know if we had gotten there or not, but I was asked to grade or read some newspapers. And it was, I forgot what it was about. They were maybe like Lincoln's Gettysburg Address or something like that.
Yeah.
And then we had a whole class worth of papers supposed to read. The one we chose to be the best one was the only one that was original.
Oh.
Because you could read them and they were all the same. Boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
Boom, boom.
It all downloaded from the
same. Yeah, well, you know, the college students find out that your professors actually know where to get these things online too, so they, you know, they say, you know, but, you know, frat houses will do the same thing. That you know, you save the tests and then you don't have to learn anything, you just memorize some answers.
I mean, if they clearly say, the professor says, you will have to do this, and it's like Marcy, when she was in college, I watched her, there's rules that if they say there will be no plagiarizing, and you have to do this original, and it will be checked, that has to be made clear. Otherwise, test is a test. I mean,
yeah, I suppose it has to be. I suppose it has to be made clear, but there was a time when it didn't have to be made clear.
Well,
everybody knew that you did your own work.
Is that the same thing as like if you had an idea for an invention and somebody went and got it
patented?
Copyrighted before you had a chance to?
Yeah.
Is that plagiarism?
Yeah. It's just, you know, it's theft. It's
so
somebody did the work. They ought to get paid for it. I mean, this is a huge thing with China now. You know, this software, just a pirate software. But this is so rampant. Just basic integrity of taking credit for your own work instead of somebody else's seems like it's an unusual thing these days. Yeah, but if they're smart, you can't because there's a time limit. So you have to do that. But it's almost impossible not to. I mean, I forget if it was on Netflix or Amazon Prime, but I've been watching. There's a series of documentaries called Rotten, and it's about food issues, worldwide food issues. And one of the things, who knew? The avocado industry is multi-billion-dollar industry now. And it turns out that Chile has a perfect environment for growing avocados, but avocados need a lot of water. So the big corporations, I don't know if it's a bribe or a tax to the government to get water rights, which they take from farmers who have been there for generations. And they just showed this guy, and he said, look, when you buy an avocado from Chile, you're stealing my farm. And we don't even know it, right? I mean, this everything is so complex today that this guy is out of work. He, you know, they're going into poverty because a corporation can bribe the government and get the money. And I don't know that. I just have guacamole, right? But, you know, everything is so complex that we're tainted with everything. And speaking of that, I mean, I read somewhere of the hundreds of millions of dollars that Netflix loses because one person buys a license and then shares the password with everybody that they know. That's theft. That is stealing just as much as mugging somebody on the street. And the essence of this commandment is that it restricts not just you and me and the mugger on the street, but the high and mighty, the powerful, the government, everybody is touched by this. So as we, you know, a whole bunch of ways to look at it, this is, I don't know if you can see that, but the butcher's got his finger on the scales, and the buyer's got her fingers on the scales. You know, hopefully they even out, but you never know. And that, I mean, one of the scriptures we'll get to later on is God says, do not have two kinds of scales, right? Because what they would have would be, if I'm buying something, I have one weighted scale, but if I'm selling something, I have another weighted scale. And it's just basic integrity of a person and of a culture. And if you cannot trust people and corporations and governments, then it's a pitiful life. So
what year was that? Can you see their date up there?
1936. How quaint.
Wow.
Yes. Yeah. People don't change. Joanne?
A story that goes along with this. My first husband's father dearly loved the Lord after he came to faith and served him and taught Sunday school up into his 80s whenever he wasn't in the hospital. And but he, when he was a young man, worked in a grocery store. Probably age.
Yeah.
And it was the kind where you got your coffee. You told them, you know, I want a pound of coffee. Did you want the regular kind or did you want the extra special coffee? But down underneath the counter, it was all one bin.
Oh.
But he was taught to go over here for the cheap coffee, but to the people who were snooty duty and wanted the best coffee, he was taught to go over here.
But it's the same.
After he came to faith, that just bothered him. And he told that story over and over about how he just regretted the dishonesty of it when the people were getting, the poor people were getting the same coffee if they only had known.
Yeah. And, I mean, that's the kind of decisions that Christians have to make in business. I mean, I don't know how many times.
A young man that, you know, was doing what the boss said, that in later years when he looked back on that and recognized it as theft, as stealing, and he used that example and just repented of it over and over again.
Yeah. I mean, and it is not easy. I mean, if he was in that job, it is not easy then to stand up and say, no, I won't do that. So, I mean, it really is it's the end of your job to do that. So, bottom line is taking that which belongs to another. You can do it by violence, by deception, by corruption. violence. I mean, we're used to that, and typically we think of some burglar or mugger or something like that. But deception is even worse. I mean, I can't count the number of emails I get, you know, that I've, you know, I've been selected to help the Nairobi prince of something or other get all kinds of money, and all I have to do is send $35 and I'll get millions of dollars. But the deception is maybe even worse than violence. And then corruption is the worst of all. When you have governments, I forget what it was, you know, in the early 2000s, 2005 maybe, they had this case that took place in Connecticut where you had waterfront properties that the town decided they weren't raising enough tax revenue. And a private contractor says, look, if you tear down these homes, I'll build, you know, really high-end homes and a mall and everything else, and you'll make this much more taxes. And so the town condemned all those houses under eminent domain. Now, normally, eminent domain is we're going to build a hospital, we're going to build a school, we're going to build a highway, and, you know, we need the property. But here it was, take somebody's property and give it to someone because they're going to give the town more money, taxes or bribes or whatever. And it went all the way to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said, yeah, you can do that. That's theft by the powerful against the weak. And that's just as bad as a mugger on the street, maybe even worse. Now, this also includes...
Can we back that up? It says, you know, Caesar, right? We're supposed to follow the laws of the land, and you're not sinning if you follow the law. I don't like what the wildlife officer does, but all he sees is black and white. If this went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court ruled it was okay, then it's not theft by corruption. That's the rules. The rules are set. It's said that it's ugly, but who are you to rule corruption when the rules are set that is what we call corruption might not be corruption?
Well, here, I'll tell you who I am.
Okay, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to say it like
so,
that.
So, yeah, that's fine. But the next slide, what we've looked at in these commandments is every one of them reveals the nature and character of God. And so what we're looking at is the nature and character of God is justice. And when you have a court or a municipality or a business that is unjust, that violates this commandment, whether the Supreme Court or anybody else says it's okay or not. So there's the hope in the Old Testament that we'll see in a minute, is that God himself said this hope of Israel was that every man would sit under his own vine and under his own fig tree. That there is a protection of private property that is built into the nature of God and the people that he has created. And the law against taking it is just as valid against the guy that robs the convenience store as the highest official in the land. It's no different. And that's, I mean, and if it turns out, and what we'll see is that the essence of justice in the Old Testament is that you do not look at the status, wealth, or power of the person when you're rendering a decision of what's right and what's wrong. And that's why this is evil, and it's enshrined in our Constitution is that you cannot take somebody's private property. Joanne?
Another example would be the court may say that abortion is legal.
It doesn't make it right. I mean, it can make it legal. I mean, yeah, they made it legal, but it doesn't make it right. So moving on, though, so this includes kidnapping, man-stealing. And some commentators believe that this is the primary emphasis of this, that there is a theft of people to enslave, which also violates this commandment. In Exodus 21, he who kidnaps a man, whether he sells him or is found in his possession, shall surely be put to death. Deuteronomy 24:7, if a man is caught kidnapping any of his countrymen, he deals with him violently or sells him, then the thief shall die. You shall purge the evil from among you. Unless we think it's only Old Testament, 1 Timothy 1, that the law is made for those who are lawless and rebellious, for the ungodly and sinners, the unholy and profane, for those who kill their fathers or mothers, for murderers and immoral men and homosexuals and kidnappers and liars and perjurers, whatever else is contrary to sound teaching. That so theft, in essence, is to steal a person. I mean, if I steal somebody's work, I'm stealing that person. If I steal somebody's money, I'm stealing the labor that he put into it. And if I steal the person to sell him into slavery, then I'm stealing that theft. So this command, like all of them, spread to just about everything in life. So let me ask you, what does this reveal about the character and nature of God? He knows that we need rules. He also knows we hate them. Margaret, were you saying something?
We can trust him.
He's honest. He is absolutely honest. What else? Ooh. So, yeah, what is the motive for stealing? And lack of faith. I mean, if I really believe that the Lord will supply my need, then I don't have to steal it from you. I suppose I could say, hey, I see a bag of gold on somebody's porch. The Lord gave that to the Lord opened that up for me. But so it's really it's selfishness, that my need is more important than yours, and it's lack of faith that the Lord won't provide my need and I have to take it for myself. So first of all, the Lord is the creator, the owner, and the ruler of all that exists. The earth is the Lord's and the fullness of it. All belong to him. And he is the generous provider of all that people need. Right? In Psalm 50, if I was hungry, I wouldn't tell you. Right? Because I own the cattle on 1,000 hills. And or what Paul says in Acts, that the Lord does not dwell in temples made with human hands, neither is he served by them, but he gives to all life and breath and all things. Psalm 104, he provides grain, harvest, and wine to gladden the heart of men. That this is who he is he is the creator, but he's also the giver. So when we steal, we're violating the essence of the giver. And he is the God of justice. That this hope of dwelling under your own vine, on your own fig tree, as part of the inheritance that he gave to God's people. I had to laugh. Remember, when was that? A few years ago, when they had the Occupy Wall Street. Right. This was the answer to the Tea Party. Right. So you had this, you know, people at Wall Street occupying it, you know, against capitalism. And I saw this thing. I forget if it was on the radio or on YouTube, but It was a fellow that had come from Eastern Europe. So he knew what it was like to live under communist rule. And he was going through this, you know, the Occupy Wall Street people. And he's just interviewing people that were talking about, you know, bringing down capitalism as though they knew something about communism, which they didn't. And he said, well, why do you want to do that? Well, I'm against private property. Really? You're against private property? Okay, so give me that iPad. Oh, no. That's mine. Well, what do you mean? You're against private property, so give me that iPad. Oh, no, that's not private property. That's personal property. You know, it's the essence of the scripture is a just society where people can get paid what they deserve to do what they do and live a life that's pleasing to them and to the Lord. And it's not, everybody is not all going to be on the same level of income, but they have a right to their own. And that's the justice of God, that he would keep, limit governments from violating and limit individuals from violating other people. So the justice is not just for the poor, it's not just for the powerful, it's for everyone. Later on, we'll see the scripture. It says, you know, in your judgments, do not take the face. That is, do not look at the status of the people that are in disagreement. You look at the facts of the case. And maybe most important, God is the God who sets people free. He does not enslave them. He sets them free. So, given all that, how do we fulfill this commandment?
We look to God for his blessing, his provision.
Look to the Lord for his provision. What was that first word? What? Work, earn. What else?
Share.
Work, earn, share.
You know, that's why I left my last company a couple months ago. I left Bouchard because what the owner was doing was lying to his people, lying to the government agencies, doing a lot, running large equipment that was super hazardous to the world, but the other guys did not, you know, there were some guys that wouldn't leave, and I call that enabling. They were enabling him by keeping working for him, but I wouldn't, I can't do it. I prayed, and my answers kept coming back. Gotta get, you know, leave. So I'm trusting the word. And that's what I did, and yeah, I left a great company, beautiful equipment, but I'm not going to continue to enable a person like that. You know, that's, so we have to, like, leave it up.
So did you have another job when you made that decision?
I am at a point in my career to where I comfortably move around, you know, and I'm doing it for a while, but not other guys.
Exactly. And you know, while I'm doing it, you know, I'm sharing in the rewards, but I'm also sharing in the guilt, aren't I?
Yeah, I don't want to be that guy. I want to, you know.
Yeah. I don't know how many times I've had some manager that will tell me, you know, tell the customer X, Y, Z. I'm thinking, well, wait a minute. You don't want me to lie to you, right? No. Well, don't ask me to lie to the customer then. You know, I was doing ship and receive. Tell them it went out. You know, it's sitting on my table, right? It didn't go out. I can't do that. But, you know, the boss wants you to do for him what he doesn't want you to do to him, what you do for him. And, you know, it's a challenge to stand and you know, find a place of integrity. But Romans 13, don't owe anybody anything except to love. Don't defraud. This is what Joanne, honest work, earn and save. But it's not enough just to not steal. The positive side is to give, right? So that in Ephesians, Paul says, let him who steals steal no more, but rather do something good with his hands that he might have something to give to those in need, right? So I can stop stealing, but I haven't fulfilled this commandment until I have stopped stealing and I'm able to give. 1 Timothy, let those that are rich in this present world be rich in good works in order to fulfill this commandment. I read a story recently. There's a poor family. The husband and father had died, and they, you know, it's a single mother, a bunch of kids, really strapped. And they go to church one Sunday, and the pastor says, "We're going to take a collection in 1 month to give to a poor family. And I'm asking you to be sacrificial to give to this family." And this family that didn't have anything, they go home and say, "What are we going to do in order to give money to this poor family?" And the mother said, "Well, you know what? I can buy potatoes, and we'll just eat that for a month, and we'll save the money to give." And the kids went out and did chores, and, you know, they kept the electric lights off to save money, just, you know, everything they could think of. And they bought some things and made some crafts and sold them. And they ended up, each of the kids had saved like 20 bucks. This is right after World War II. It's a lot of money, and the mother has $10. So they go to church. They're so excited that we're going to be able to bless this poor family. And they put the money in the offering plate, 70 bucks, which is a ton of money. It took them a month of sacrifice. And they go home. They're all elated. And then the pastor shows up, and he gives them an envelope. They didn't know they were poor, because life was good. You know, they didn't even have a full set of silverware, but it was a game. Who got this fork and who got this spoon? And they didn't know they were poor. Now they're ashamed. And they open this envelope, and there's $83. So they gave $70 out of their poverty, and the whole church gave another $13. And they were so hurt and ashamed. The kids didn't even want to go to church. Because now they see their clothes differently than they did before, because now we're poor. But the mother said, and she hadn't been raised in the way parents are today, she said, "You're going to church." Right? It wasn't like they had a choice. And they go there, but they have been thinking, what are we going to do with this money? And it so happens there was a missionary that Sunday. And he said, "I'm raising money for these villages. They build huts with mud, but they don't have any materials to put a roof on. And it costs $100 to put a roof on, and I just want to take special offering for this." So they said, "That's it. We'll give this money, this $83 or whatever it was, to to this missionary. And when they count the offering, there's just over $100. So again, they gave the 83 or 87, whatever it was, and the whole rest of the church, $13 for this. And the missionary says, "Wow, you must have some rich people in this church to be able to give that much." And they went home saying, "You know what? We're the richest people in that church. The missionary said so." But you know what? I think they were the richest people. They were the ones. These are the ones that Jesus, remember, he's watching people give their offerings and they're all putting in, you know, megabucks or whatever they're putting in. And one old poor widow throws in two tiny coins, 1/64th of a day's wage. And Jesus, inspecting what they're giving, says she's given more than anyone else. They all gave out of their abundance. She gave everything that she had. And this is the time of year when we start thinking of these things, isn't it? When gift giving and gift buying becomes so big. And we have a God that has given far, far more than we can ever imagine. That Jesus, who was rich, became poor for our sake. That this God of gods took on human flesh to dwell among us and give his life a ransom for many. This is what our God is like. So we can quibble about what is right and wrong in every situation, but what is always right is to give the way Jesus gives. I've been reading a biography of William Booth, the founder of the Salvation Army's daughter, who became the commander in the U.S. And the Salvation Army in World War I, they sent hordes of people to France in order to minister to soldiers. And women in the Salvation Army that would go and would just make donuts and food and give them things, and said that the boys were going to the front and they weren't allowed to go, but some of them, they would hide in the supply wagons because they said, you know, we can lose our lives, but we can't leave the boys that we minister to. And at the end, somebody had said of them that the Salvation Army, they went where they were needed, they did what they could, and they gave what they had. That's the heart of the gospel. And so it's not enough for me just to stop stealing. What has to happen is that our hearts are enlarged with the love of God so that we give so that other people can know the gospel that there is in him. We fight for justice for those that don't get their rights. It's not enough that I get mine. We fight for those that also need theirs. So this, what Jesus did, is more blessed to give than to receive. He became poor that we might become rich. He served and gave his life a ransom for many. So I cannot take from others and serve the one that gave all he had for me. That's the bottom line of this command, as with all of them. So what are your thoughts? We're not going to get to the next commandment, so...
Hallmark Channel last night, and Joanne said, "You need to watch this." And what they had done, they had gone into one of these areas that had been devastated by the tornadoes, and they were building houses for folks.
Yeah.
And it was all coming together. So when you do something for someone else, it's just it's amazing what the blessing you get out of that. And it can be a little, it can be a lot, it's whatever it is. But it means a lot to other people for someone to do something. Now think about what Margaret and the Ministerial Association do, coats for kids. You know, buying a coat and putting it in a box for a child to have that's cold. All those things are so important, and I guess it seems to be more focused this time of year. We think about Christmas and that sort of thing, and Salvation Army kettles and all that, but still, the trees that you get the names off of and you buy gifts for, that's what it's all about. I mean, it's doing something for someone else.
Yeah.
And that's so important, and we need to be reminded of that.
The notes that we get for those coats.
Yeah.
Like tears when you read it. Really appreciate
it. I'm always reminded of that O. Henry story. Everybody knows that the gift of the Magi, where this poor couple wanting to buy Christmas gifts for each other, right? So the woman gets her hair cut and sells that so she can buy a watch fob for his watch that his father had handed down. And what does he do? But he sells the watch so he could buy this fancy comb for her long hair. And there's something that makes us want to, you know, we get so tired of just opening, you know, gifts, we don't even care anymore. These are people that would give up what was valuable for what was precious. That's our God. That he would give up the best that he had for us is way beyond anything that we can imagine. Anything else that comes to mind? Well, we will not meet again until January 8th. So, and then, hopefully, we'll finish the Ten Commandments and the whole rest of the book real fast. But we shall see.
The correct percentage of our fruits goes to Christ, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the way I try to look at it. And, you know, biblically, you know, one seed per, you know, or hopefully more, but a percentage of my fruit goes to Christ, because the government's going to get X amount of that. You still got your retirement, you got to think about, you got everything, yeah. You know, you got it, because my back isn't going to be there forever. Sooner or later, you know, I might end up physically do what I'm doing.
Yeah, I mean, what did Wesley say? Earn all you can, save all you can, give all you can.
Yeah.
We skipped over it, but, you know, there is another text that says, you know, will a man rob God? And the people say, how did we rob God? Well, you rob him by not bringing the tithe into his storehouse. So, I mean, it's bad enough to rob other people. But to rob God, that's really bad. And yeah, that. So what we need is you know, we can be irate about things that happen in society, but what we really need is the heart of compassion and giving that Jesus had. That we would be like him, and then, you know, we'll do what he. What he wants, if we have his heart. So the law itself just tells me where I fall short. But only Jesus can change my heart, can make me different, to make me somebody that I'm not. He's the only one. He fulfilled this, and he's able to make it us fulfill it in him.
Expected Jesus, born to set thy people free from our fears and sins, release us.